And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome into the show. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here. We've got a lot of news happening on this Monday afternoon, a lot of things happening right now, in fact. And so I want to bring you in. We're going to get to stimulus news, some major news out of Ohio this afternoon in the Senate, but really big news on the stimulus front, which we will get to in just a few moments. But on the economy, I want to watch now as President Biden just now, moments before we went live here, just signed an executive order, which is a Made in America executive order. There's a lot of really interesting and kind of shifty things about the way in which companies can get around, or we can classify certain things that are made in the United States. And certain auto parts, you can say that, oh, these lesser known pieces of the car are part of this. They're fully made in America. And then therefore, we get to hit certain regulations within the federal government. But anyway, the president basically saying tonight that we are going to push a Made in America policy. And this executive action is going to reclassify a lot of these things to make sure American manufacturing is first and prominent. I'm always conflicted about these kinds of policies, because on the one hand, you know, if you don't have the manufacturing capacity, you're sort of forcing you're forcing then other companies to buy or use American manufacturing that might not even exist or that might not be up to the standards. I mean, this is one of the issues with American manufacturing right now, is that look, people wanted all these cheap televisions, right, in the United States. And sadly, this is one of the issues, that the reason a lot of this manufacturing has moved overseas is because we demanded cheaper goods in the United States. And in many ways, consumers are to blame for that, right? We've gotten so used to these cheaper things. But let's listen to the president. He just signed this executive order. We'll get to your stimulus news. We're going to get to what's going on in the Senate this afternoon. There's a whole lot of stuff happening right here, but let's listen to the president. Right now, take some questions from reporters on this Made in America program, and hopefully he'll also address some things on the stimulus front and impeachment.
The teachers I know, they want to work. They just want to work in a safe environment, and as safe as we can rationally make it, and we can do that, and we should be able to open up every school, kindergarten through eighth grade, if in fact we administer these tests. And it'll have the added advantage, I might add, of putting millions of people back to work. All those mothers and fathers that are home taking care of their children rather than go to work, even when they can work. They're not able to do it unless they have the luxury of working distance-wise like many of us do. They're not able to do it. And so this is about generating economic growth overall as well.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Alex Alper from Reuters. I wanted to ask a question about Navalny. If you are considering imposing sanctions on any of the individuals involved in his attempted poisoning and or his arrest when he returned from Germany, and if not, is that related to your concerns about it potentially derailing a New START extension? Thank you.
I find that we can both operate in the mutual self-interest of our countries as a New START agreement, and make it clear to Russia that we are very concerned about their behavior, whether it's Navalny, whether it's the solar winds, or whether it's reports of bounties on the heads of Americans in Afghanistan. I've asked the agencies in question to do a thorough read for me on every one of those issues to update me precisely where they are. And I will not hesitate to raise those issues with the Russians.
Jeff from NBC.
So this is the president speaking live right now, taking
questions.
About
your COVID relief deal. On Friday, you said the nation is in.
And here we go, stimulus question.
We should act like it. Given that, given the scale and the severity of the need, how long are you willing to get sufficient Republican support before you would greenlight Democrat attempts to use reconciliation?
Great question. That
bill? Well, look. The decision on reconciliation will be one made by the leaders of the House and the Senate. But here's the deal. I have been doing legislative negotiations for a large part of my life. I know how the system works. And what I'm not — can't guarantee anything at all, but I can say that what I'm going to be doing, and we've already begun, is making it clear to the leadership in the House and the Senate, as well as the group of 16, bipartisan group, as well as Republican individuals who have an interest in the issues that are in that my package, and saying, here's what I'm doing, here's why I want to do it, here's why I think we need to do it, and what kind of support can or can't you give to that? And then we go on to the way in which we deal with legislation all the time. You know, we didn't have any votes for the recovery package when Barack and I came into office. We were short 3 votes. We didn't know we had the votes until the day of bringing it up. And but here's the deal. You know, it's interesting, and I know you ask a lot of these questions. You know the answers, but you have to help educate the public as well. I'm not suggesting you don't know what I'm about to say. No one wants to give up on their position until there's no other alternative. They have to make a decision that they don't do what they don't support what is being proposed, or they insist on what they have, or they let it all go away, fall down. I think we're far from that point right now. The decision to use reconciliation will depend upon how these negotiations go. And let me make clear about negotiations. I've always believed part of negotiation on the part of a president and or a chairman of a committee trying to get a major piece of legislation passed is about consultation. It's not enough for me just to come up to you and say, I like this, I expect you to support it. I want to explain to you why I think it's so important in this package that we have to provide for money for additional vaccines, why I think it's so important why we provide for money to extend unemployment benefits, why I think it's so important that we provide money to provide for the ability of people not to be thrown out of their apartments during this pandemic because they can't afford their rent, and to make the case to you why I think and what I think the priorities within this piece that we think the priorities are, I apologize, were within this legislation. And I don't expect we'll know whether we have an agreement and to what extent the entire package will be able to pass or not pass until we get right down to the very end of this process, which will be probably in a couple weeks. But the point is, this is just the process beginning.
Annie, from Washington Post. So this is just the process beginning.
Thank you, Mr. President.
And Annie, we're all not going to get what we want.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about one of the sort of major themes of your campaign and how you sort of intend to measure and enact it, and that is the idea of unity. If you could talk a little bit about what you see unity as being. There are some people who are defining it as being bipartisan. Others are saying it is what most of the people in the country, defined by some poll, might believe, or any sort of number of, or perhaps it's 50 plus one, or 50 plus 2, or 75%. So given that it is such a key part of your message and your promise, can you talk and reflect a little bit more about what is unity when you see it and as you define it?
Well, Annie, I think it makes up several of the issues, the points you made. One is unity requires you to eliminate the vitriol, make anything that you disagree with about the other person's personality or their lack of integrity or they're not decent legislators and the like. So we have to get rid of that. And I think that's already beginning to change, but God knows where things go, number one. Unity also is trying to reflect what the majority of the American people, Democrat, Republican, Independent, think is within the fulcrum of what needs to be done to make their lives and the lives of Americans better. For example, if you look at the data, and I'm not claiming the polling data to be exact, but if you look at the data, you have, I think it's, I hope I'm saying it gets correct. You may correct me if I get the number wrong. I think it's 57-58% of the American people, including Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, think that we have to do something about the COVID vaccine. We have to do something about making sure that people who are hurting badly, can't eat, don't have food, are in a position where they're about to be thrown out of their apartments, et cetera, being able to have an opportunity to get a job, that they all think we should be acting, we should be doing more. Unity also is trying to get, at a minimum, if you pass a piece of legislation that breaks down on party lines, but it gets passed, it doesn't mean there wasn't unity. It just means it wasn't bipartisan. I prefer these things to be bipartisan, because I'm trying to generate some consensus and take sort of the, how can I say it, the vitriol out of all of this. Because I'm confident from my discussions. There are a number of Republicans who know we have to do something about food insecurity for people in this pandemic. I'm confident they know we have to do something about figuring out how to get children back in school. And there's easy ways to deal with this. One, if you're anti-union, you can say it's all because of teachers. If you want to make a case, though, that it's complicated, you say, well, what do you have to do to make it safe to get in those schools? Now, we're going to have arguments. For example, I propose that we, because it was bipartisan, I thought it would increase the prospects of passage, the additional $1,400 in direct cash payment to folks. Well, there's legitimate reason for people to say, do you have the lines drawn the exact right way? Should it go to anybody making over X number of dollars or Y? I'm open to negotiate those things. That's all. I picked it because I thought it was rational, reasonable, and it had overwhelming bipartisan support in the House when it passed. But this is all a bit of a moving target. In terms of the precision with which this goes, you're asking about unity, 51 votes, bipartisan, et cetera. The other piece of this is that the one thing that gives me hope that we're not only going to sort of stay away from the ad hominem attacks on one another is that there is an overwhelming consensus among the major economists at home and in the world that the way to avoid a deeper recession moving in the direction of losing our competitive capacity is to spend money now, to from across the board. Every major institution has said, if we don't invest now, we're going to lose so much altitude in terms of our employment base and our economic growth, it's going to be harder to reestablish it. We can afford to do it now. As a matter of fact, I think the response has been, we can't afford not to invest now. We can't afford to fail to invest now. And I think there's a growing realization of that on the part of all but some very, very hard-edged partisans, maybe on both sides. But I think there is a growing consensus. Whether we get it all done exactly the way I want it remains to be seen. But I'm confident that we can work our way through. We have to work our way through because, as I've said 100 times, there is no ability in a democracy for it to function without the ability to reach consensus. Otherwise, it just becomes executive fiat or battleground issues that get us virtually nowhere. I don't want to hold my colleague may know, the vice president, but, you know, I think there were very few debates on the Senate floor the whole last year on almost any issue. Well, that benefits no one. Doesn't inform anybody, doesn't allow the public to make judgments about who they think is right or wrong. So I am optimistic that it may take some time, but over the year, the way if we treat each other with respect, and we're going to argue like hell. I'm confident of that, believe me, I know that. I've been there. But I think we can do it in a way that we can get things done for the American people.
All right, so that's the President of the United States taking a few questions on. First of all, he came out to announce his executive order on the Made in America plan. So he just signed an executive order on that front. But then he's taking questions on the COVID relief package right now. I want to make sure that we don't miss a question on this. But I'm going to parse this out. I've got a lot of other news to get to here on the stimulus front, but it's important to listen to the president when he speaks about stimulus. So that's why I wanted to bring this is live remarks right now. So I just want to make sure I don't miss a question on that.
Is the vaccine funding. When do you think any American who wants to get the shot will be able to get the shot?
Well, I'll try to answer the three parts of your question as I heard them. One, time is of the essence. Time is of the essence. And I must tell you, I'm reluctant to cherry pick and take out one or two items here and then have to go through it again, because these all are kind of, they go sort of hand in glove, each of these issues, number one. Number two, we are optimistic that we will have enough vaccine, and in very short order, we As you know, we came in office without knowledge of how much vaccine was being held in abeyance or available. Now that we're here, we've been around a week or so, we now have that. And we've gotten commitments from some of the producers that they will, in fact, produce more vaccine in a relatively short period of time and then continue that down the road. So I'm quite confident that we will be in a position within the next 3 weeks or so to be vaccinating people at the range of a million a day or in excess of that. That is my I promised that we would get at least a 100 million vaccinations. That's not people, because sometimes you need more than one shot, the vaccination, but 100 million shots in people's arms of the vaccine. I think with the grace of God and the goodwill of the neighbor and the crick not rising, as the old saying goes, I think we may be able to get that to 1.5 million a day rather than 1 million a day. But we have to meet that goal of a million a day. And everything points that we're going to have, A, the enough vaccine, B, enough syringes and all the paraphernalia needed to store, keep, inject,
paraphernalia,
move into your arm the vaccine. Three, a number of vaccinators, people administering the vaccine, which is not an easy task, of those who have those facilities like the nursing homes and hospitals. They have the people to do it, but they don't have the capacity to do everyone. And so I think we're going to have we're leaning hard on into areas where we produce more vaccinators. We feel confident we can do that. And thirdly, it's really important that we have the fora, the place, the facility, the circumstance where people can show up, stand in line, and get their vaccine without having to stand in line for 8 hours. Being able to pick up the phone, call the pharmacy, and get your name on the list, et cetera. All those mechanical things are really, they sound simple, but they're all consequential when we're trying to get out a minimum of 100 million vaccinations in 100 days and move in the direction where we are well beyond that in the next 100 days so we can get to the point where we reach herd immunity in a country of over 300 million people.
All right. So there's the president speaking on COVID relief, COVID vaccinations, getting all of this stuff rolled out. I don't know. I got to say, you know, his response to the stimulus question was weak. I thought when the reporter asked him about at what point will you basically abandon Republicans, stop trying to be Mr. Nice Guy and work on a bipartisan basis and go through the reconciliation process. Again, we can all have some bit of legislative history and understanding here in context that the reconciliation process basically means that they can take COVID relief and stimulus and shove it into budget matters on the Senate floor. And they wouldn't need 60 votes. They would only need 51 votes. That's it. And that's all they would need. I have to say this one thing that I do like about Joe Biden a lot is that he constantly defers to Kamala Harris. He's like constantly checking over his shoulder, checking in with her and asking questions of her. And like, I really like that. I think that shows a great level of respect for his vice president. So anyway, that's just a little side note on a 30,000 foot level. But I think him answering that question, he just danced around it. And you can tell that he, being a member of the Senate for so long, basically wants to kowtow to Republicans. He wants to give them a chance. He wants to just, you know, go through this legislative process, give them a chance to debate and open on the Senate floor. He's like, we haven't had debates on the Senate floor. That's all great. Like, I appreciate that. That's all great in normal times. We are not in normal times, okay? People are dying. People are suffering. So I get that he wants to have a bipartisan relationship with Republicans because, you know, God knows we need to get back there at some point, I suppose. But on the other hand, people are dying. People are suffering. People are losing their homes. People are, you know, not able to get vaccines. Like, okay, enough is enough. You won an election. In a big way, by the way, okay? Like, Trump's gone. Georgia flipped an entire state. Two senators flipped for you. Okay, they want you to put up or shut up. I can see it here in the chat. How many of you are saying this in the chat right now? Like, hey, Let's go. Enough talk, enough talk, enough talk. But he is also a realist. And so one thing you have to understand about American history is that the president of the United States is actually very limited constitutionally. And so this is one, I think, of the great conundrums of American politics that most people don't understand, is that constitutionally, the president has very little power, sadly, when it comes to legislating at all. They can put up a bill, but that's it. Yes, they can enact trade policy and treaties with the different, with around the world and other countries, but they don't really have a lot of power. And it wasn't until FDR that we expected our presidents to actually run on a platform that they're going to enact. Before that, presidents didn't even run on a platform. They didn't say, I'm going to pass this, I'm going to cut taxes, we didn't expect presidents at all to do that. And until FDR came forward with a New Deal and Congress just backed up and they said, we can't figure this depression out, you figure it out. Now we expect our presidents to run on a platform. And unfortunately, they can almost get none of it through. I mean, this is the truth. But now you have an opportunity. You run the whole show. Democrats are in control. Stop kowtowing to Republicans right now. I don't care. I don't want to hear what Mitch McConnell thinks anymore. Turtle Boy needs to go back to Kentucky. He lost, and yet what is he doing? He's holding on to power right now and trying to hold up any moves that the Senate can make until he gets an agreement on filibustering. So the president leaving there after his Made in America signing of the executive order and taking a few questions on that tonight at the White House, trying to bring American manufacturing, a focus on American manufacturing. Other people saying, hey, I'm not going to take the shot. I don't know if the vaccine's available. I'm not going to take it. I don't have any other symptoms. Would you take it? Would you not? I'd love to hear all of you. Give me your thoughts on this in the chat. What do you guys think? Would you guys take the vaccine? Let me know in the chat what you think about that. So we've got a lot of other news to get to tonight, but President Biden speaking just a few moments ago, I wanted to bring that live to you. We've got some other moving parts on this stimulus tonight. And we've got some startling new poverty numbers that are out today that show exactly just how important economic stimulus is. We've also got a bombshell story out of Ohio on the Senate side. And thank you all for your super chats. Very, very kind of you to send me a super chat. I really appreciate that. And I see we have one new member tonight. So if you'd like to become a channel member and support independent journalism, you know, we are not bought and sold by billionaire corporations, like all of your mainstream media. We are independent. I run this network myself. I spent 20 years in the mainstream media, belly of the beast. And now I get to cover the stories that I believe are important for you. And I will do it with no BS. So I will call out the president. I will call out Republicans. I will call out anybody who gets in my way and who wants to try to spin you. We will cover it fair and honestly here on this show. So a lot of you saying, yes, I will. Yeah, if you'd like to become a channel member, it's easy. Just go to morninginvest.com/join and you can become a channel member to support this show. I really appreciate it. The eclectic e-tailer says no one's died from the shot yet. Yet, okay. We do know Moderna came out this afternoon and announced that their vaccine, they found that it is protective against these new strains that are rolling out, although they're not yet sure about this new South African strain, and they're going to be testing that. But the other strains, the variants that have come out, Moderna announced this afternoon that they are, in fact, the vaccine protects against those, okay? Merck also coming out this afternoon, abandoning it, saying, hey, we couldn't figure it out. We can't come up with a vaccine. We're done. Isn't that amazing? So you have Moderna, you have Pfizer. They're able to come up with vaccines. And then Merck was like, we tried, but we failed. We couldn't do it. So we're cashing in our chips. So the big money race to get all of this money from these vaccines, Merck couldn't pull it off. Fascinating, isn't it? Big pharmaceutical companies getting their billions from the government, aren't they? All right, so let's get to some of this other news tonight. Let's talk about stimulus. So the big question that was just asked of President Biden just a few moments ago, of course, is whether or not he's going to, at what point will he abandon Republicans and move forward with reconciliation from Democrats? He danced around it quite a bit, and he wouldn't commit one way or the other, but he said this is the process that he would like to see unfold, which is to give Republicans a chance to come to the table, to share their views. We will come to the table with our views. We will try to pass meaningful legislation. Not everyone's going to get what they want. But the idea that he's going to be able to pass a $1.9 trillion stimulus package is laughable with Republicans. Not going to happen. Republicans like Roy Blunt and others have already said, this is a non-starter. This is not going to happen. So at what point, the reporter asked, and I was listening to try to see if I could hear who that reporter was that asked a perfect question, and I couldn't figure it out, but was like, at what point will you abandon Republicans and just go forward? So he's not willing to commit on that front. However, Congress already is. It looks like Congress is already ready to is already moving forward with reconciliation. So in this way, Biden gets to play good cop, while Congress, Democrats, Schumer, and others can play bad cop. Smart move, maybe. He can say, I'm going to let it up to the Senate. They're already moving forward with this tonight. So John Yarmuth, who is a Representative John Yarmuth, he's one of the more powerful members of the House on this question, was asked at what point would he move forward with this reconciliation process. He basically says, we're going to start next week. So let's listen to John Yarmuth on this point. And by the way, well, let me go back here if I can and show you, because this is what Susan Collins had to say about this a short time ago. Let me go back here. Yes. So Susan Collins of Maine says, it seems premature to be considering a package of this size and scope. That concern, which I had prior to the briefing, remains a concern of mine. She's referring to the phone call yesterday that they had. So she's concerned about the size of this next round of COVID relief. But never mind that the people of Maine are suffering and that food banks don't have enough food in Maine, her state. She's out of touch, but when she was running for a re-election in the fall, she certainly wanted more stimulus. She was certainly pushing for more stimulus. And now that she won, she's right back to her corporate donors that don't want her to pass more stimulus. So that's Susan Collins' take on all of this. Here is John Yarmuth, who says, we're going to move forward without Republicans.
Committee, Democratic Congressman John Yarmuth. Thanks for coming in. Many people know, but just so everybody knows, you and your committee are central to the path forward here. If Democrats pull the plug on bipartisan talks, it's your committee that must kickstart the alternative path known as reconciliation. How long are you willing to hold out for bipartisan talks?
Well, Kate, good to be with you. We don't have to wait at all. As a matter of fact, we could look at this as kind of a parallel track. We are prepared to go to the floor as early as next week with a reconciliation resolution. And
we don't have to wait at all. We're going to go forward next week. Good. Do it. Get it going.
The committees that are involved are all working this week. We'll be ready to go. Those negotiations that are happening now can continue. We can pass our budget reconciliation instructions and get them over to the Senate. And then if they reach an agreement, which would be great, we'd all prefer a bipartisan agreement, then we can just withdraw those reconciliation instructions and use that process for something else down the road.
Good. What do you think about that? Smash that like button if you think that they should move forward with reconciliation. I would smash the like button, but I can't do that on my very own channel. So yes. Go, run forward with it.
We're going to move ahead.
But do you think that helps or hurts the kind of spirit of bipartisan negotiation?
Who gives a rat's ass about spirit of bipartisan negotiations? Where was Mitch McConnell on bipartisan negotiations? He wouldn't even allow debate on the Senate floor. What do we care? Is that smart, Kate Baldwin? Who cares about spirited debate? Is that what we need right now? We need spirited debate in this country. Aren't enough Americans hurting right now? Aren't enough Americans unable to pay their medical bills? Aren't enough Americans out of work? Aren't enough Americans food insecure right now? Aren't enough Americans facing the fact that they don't have enough hours at work so they can't put food on the table? Aren't enough Americans dealing with virtual school for their kids? They don't even have internet access. 12 million kids don't have internet access in the United States. You want a spirited debate? So that's what we're doing, literally.
If you're saying this is sitting in the background, boys.
Well, we're not really worried about which path we take. What we're worried about is the suffering of the American people, right?
Great answer. Great answer. By the way, where did Kate Baldwin disappear to on CNN? Like, hey, fade to black. He's like, yeah, we don't care about that. Good answer, John. Good. We care about the suffering of the American people right now. Good answer.
Now, and the urgent need to get help getting the vaccine distributed and put into hundreds of millions of American arms. We can't get this money out overnight. And some of the provisions, for instance, the extending the unemployment insurance supplement, that expires in mid-March. So,
Crystal Williams in our chat says, Clayton, I'm seriously considering selling my house and moving to Canada. Yeah, you're not alone. Why wouldn't you? Or Europe, where they actually take care of their citizens. I mean, literally, I've talked to sources at the embassies who've said they have never, and at the consulates, they have never seen the flood of Americans leaving like they have, like they've never seen it at this level. Yeah. So you're not alone, Crystal. There's a reason, but you may actually find a lot of trouble trying to move to Canada right now. We actually spoke to friends last night who were considering moving to Canada, and they said they can't. They're, one member of the family is Canadian, and yet they can't with the spouse. Like, they're really restrictive. They do not want Americans moving to Canada. They're like, you guys have effed up your own country plenty. You want free health care? You want to be taken care of? Sorry. So there's a lot of restrictions and hoops to jump through to get to Canada right now. I will tell you about that. You can do some research on it. I'm telling you, you may probably have a better chance of actually moving to Europe, where you actually would have free education, free public college, and all of that, plus a great healthcare system. So this is not fantasy.
We can't wait around for negotiations very long because we have to get help out urgently. Again, if we're going to get the vaccine distributed efficiently and get the American public vaccinated and get help to the millions of American people who are still suffering a lot. We're seeing now 900,000 additional people filing for unemployment the last couple of weeks. They need that help.
Do you need to move ahead one way or the other before the Senate impeachment trial begins?
Well, obviously the House is not affected by the impeachment trial, so we're going to do the work that we have to do. And I think it would be great if the Senate could act on this before the impeachment trial begins. Realistically, that gives them about a week and a half now to get that done, which probably won't happen. But again, I hope the negotiations are fruitful and successful. I think that you can make a case for virtually everything in President Biden's proposal, the $1.9 trillion, that it actually does relate to COVID virus and the economic fallout from that. So, I think we have a very strong case. I think the American people are behind us. And again, there is a sense of urgency here. We can't wait 2 months. We passed a major bill in last May. Republicans said, let's wait. We passed one in October. They said, let's wait. We finally got the $900 billion plan in late December. And we said at the time, and virtually every economist across the philosophical spectrum says the same thing. That wasn't enough. We need to do more. We need to do more rather than less. And that's what we're going to do.
There's a question, though, maybe a debate on what could be done, though, allowed, really, if you go the reconciliation process. And this gets into the weeds that makes everyone's eyes glaze over. Yeah. But if you move.
Yeah. And so let's not have our eyes glaze over. But bottom line, Democrats are planning this two-tracked philosophy right now. Joe Biden, on the one hand, is going to play good cop. He's the new president. He's going to come in and say, I want to work with Republicans, right? And then quietly behind the scenes, Democrats can say, hey, we tried to work with Republicans, but they don't want to do anything. And, you know, Ted Cruz and these other yahoos don't want to do anything meaningful for the American people. They just want to make sure that their fracking companies and their big oil companies are taken care of. So we're going to move forward with this reconciliation process and try to ram through these different pieces of the stimulus package. Good. Do it. I'm sick. I do not want you to work with Mitch McConnell. Enough is enough, especially when we're facing numbers like this. So This afternoon, we got these new poverty numbers out this morning, this afternoon. This new report I read this afternoon is really troubling. I'm going to take you through a few pieces of this report. But basically, in this new poverty numbers, 8 million people have been pushed into poverty between June and December as federal aid expired. Almost double the largest annual increase in poverty since the 1960s. Let that sink in for a second. 8 million people have now slipped into poverty under Trump from June until December because they didn't do anything on stimulus. And how do we know that? Well, let's just go to the numbers here. So take a look at, I went through this report and highlighted a few pieces for you. Poverty has risen sharply. However, in recent months, as some of the benefits that were part of the government relief package have expired, poverty rose by 2.4 percentage points. And even though the unemployment rate has fallen by 40% over this period, the disconnect between poverty and unemployment is not surprising, given that some government benefits have expired. Unemployment insurance benefits are typically only about half of pre-job loss earnings, and 5 million people have left the labor force in the past year, and therefore are not counted as unemployed. That's why there's the disconnect, folks. So when you have all these Washington yahoos, these Republicans like McConnell and others, by the way, McConnell was just speaking this afternoon. I recorded it, and I'll show you in a second, where he talks about, you know, we've had all of these people coming back to work, and the unemployment numbers are dropping. Well, this poverty report totally undercuts what he's talking about, because what they talk about is this disconnect between poverty and unemployment. Some benefits have expired. Unemployment insurance benefits are typically only about half of pre-job loss earnings, and 5 million people have left the labor force in the past year and therefore are not counted as unemployed. Despite the decline in the early pandemic, poverty is now higher than it was at the start of the year. And then it goes on. The increase in poverty in recent months was more noticeable for blacks, children, and those with a high school education or less. For black Americans, poverty has risen by 5.4 percentage points since June. Poverty has also risen noticeably for those with a high school education or less, from 17% in June up to 22% in December. The estimates also suggest that poverty rose more in states with less effective unemployment insurance systems. Stimulus keeps people out of poverty. It's not rocket science. All of these other countries, like Canada, have figured that out and pay their citizens $2,000 a month to keep them out of poverty. Oh, and they also have health care taken care of. But let's continue to mock Canada, right? When Republicans are like, you want to wind up like Canada? Yeah. Do you want to wind up like Finland? Yeah. You want to wind up like Denmark? Oh, you mean the happiest country in the world? Longest life expectancy? Yeah. So let's continue. If you continue to listen to Republicans who want to crap all over this idea of living like Canada, look at these numbers. Here, this report goes on. There's one more sentence here that are two more sentences that I think are astonishing. In our initial study, we also showed that the entire decline in poverty through June can be accounted for by one-time stimulus checks the federal government issued. What kept these people out of poverty? Stimulus. One-time stimulus checks issued by the federal government, predominantly in April and May, and the expansion of unemployment insurance eligibility and benefits. In fact, in absence of these programs, poverty would have risen sharply. Wow. Rocket science, huh? So what the heck are you going to do about it? Meanwhile, while 8 million more people were slipping into poverty, 8 million more people pushed into poverty under the Trump administration from June until December when all this federal aid expired, what else happened during that time? Oh, this. The world's richest became wealthier during COVID pandemic as inequality grew. Yeah. Really shocking, isn't it? Like, really? That's a real head scratcher. Wait a minute, the rich are going to continue to get, and the poor people are going to continue to get poorer because their government's not taking care of them, but they are taking care of the rich. They're making sure that they get tax cuts. They're making sure that they get all kinds of stimulus benefits in the form of incredibly low interest rate loans from the Federal Reserve, et cetera, you know? The real question I have for you is, why in the world is no one talking about? There's a few whispers among progressives, I being a progressive. A few of them, like Ro Khanna and others, are calling for retroactive stimulus. So when we talk about relief, we're only talking about like one check? No. In order for us to really get out of this mess, we need to have retroactive stimulus that goes back a number of months, including unemployment benefits. And if we're raising it up to $600 a week, that needs to be retroactive as well, back to December or earlier. And stimulus checks ought to be retroactive if we're going to do a monthly stimulus check program. It should be retroactive to the beginning of this pandemic, which is what other countries have done. But we, the richest country in the world, can't seem to pull that off. Chris Patrick says, it's over. Anarchy in our chat. Tommy Boye says, yes, we need this. Deborah Moika says, that's right, Clayton. Yes, why are we not talking about retroactive? I mean, how many people, let me know in the chat, would you like to see retroactive stimulus or retroactive unemployment benefits? Why are only progressives talking about it when it's supported by a majority of the American people? Why are only like Ro Khanna, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders calling for retroactive stimulus? Because, you know, our government is run by corporate elites. That's the answer, if you're wondering. And these big corporations do not want the federal government putting money into the hands of poor people. They want money going into subsidies and tax incentives and other things for big corporations. They want money going into defense contractors' pockets, oil and gas companies. Because those are the people that donate to these politicians over and over and over again. And even these politicians that can vote against self-interest of their constituents. Just like up in Alaska. We do need retroactive stimulus. Beth Colgrove says, we need retroactive stimulus. Karen Wheeler says, yes, I use... my credit cards for stimulus, or I use my credit cards to buy food and medicine. Yolanda Kimbrell says, yeah, me and my husband, disabled, we just got the $1,200 a month together. That stinks. Dreams, just dreams, and we pray for it. Yeah. Retroactive anything. Mark Phillips says, I use my credit cards well. We demand retroactive checks. Yeah, you can call your members of Congress and demand it. And by the way, you know, we're on the precipice of something pretty big happening. Here's a guy today, by the way, John Cornyn, who is speaking live right now. Let's see if I can bring him up. Who says he just couldn't figure out how to. John Cornyn can't really figure out how that we're going to be able to do an impeachment trial because this has never been done constitutionally before.
The administration will be willing to work with Congress to reach an agreement that receives broad bipartisan support as each of the previous bills that we have passed has. During my time in the Senate, I've worked with folks across the aisle on our shared priorities, and I have no plans of changing that practice now. But make no mistake, I'll push back forcefully, respectfully, when the President and I disagree. One of the things I have learned, though, is that there is a difference between what some elected officials say and what they actually do. And rather than listen to what they say, I really prefer to watch what they do and see if those are consistent. Only hours after being sworn in and speaking of unifying the country, President Biden unilaterally canceled the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. And that same day, the administration halted all new energy leasing and permitting on public lands and waters. Well, with these unfortunate actions, President Biden is killing thousands of well-paying U.S. jobs and kicking the U.S. energy industry while it's still struggling with the pandemic. I had hoped...
Sorry, John Cornyn. Your time is up. It's like Flavor Flav says, yo, your time is up. No one wants to hear you, John Cornyn, right now. But here's a guy who says there's no precedent in U.S. history for us impeaching someone after they're out of office, to which you can pull up list after list of example of people in the U.S. government being impeached after they've retired or resigned or were their term had ended. So, yes, there is precedent for it. And now we know that Senator Patrick Leahy is going to preside over the impeachment proceedings instead of Chief Justice Roberts, which makes a whole host of interesting questions. So a Democratic senator is going to preside over the impeachment proceedings. It's going to be fascinating to watch. So that is unfolding on the one hand. On the other hand, Mitch McConnell speaking just moments ago on the Senate floor, talking about working with Congress on passing bipartisan COVID relief legislation. He basically says, look, we don't have an appetite to go big on this. We've already spent if we're going to do anything, it's got to be very small and targeted. We've already spent a lot of money. And he even says, like, look, there's some Democrats that just are not going to get on board with this. He's referring, of course, to Joe Manchin. And we're going to see whether or not this actually takes shape. So here was Mitch McConnell just a few minutes ago speaking on stimulus.
Multiple Democratic senators agree that it's not the right path forward. So as the $900 billion package from 5 weeks ago continues to come online, and as remaining needs continue to come into focus, Republicans will be ready and eager to continue bipartisan discussions about smart steps forward for the American people. Bipartisan action helped our nation endure the last year. Bipartisan action helped us turn the corner. And it will be smart bipartisan actions that help us finish the fight.
By the way, he's just like, multiple Democrats don't think that this is a smart move forward. Can you tell us who are these multiple Democrats, by the way? Like, there's one, maybe Joe Manchin, who's got a lot of pushback that thanks to thousands of you guys calling his offices. And so he might not be fully on board with $2,000 stimulus, but he certainly supports a stimulus package and a massive infrastructure package. So who are these multiple Democrats? You just throw this out there. Who have you spoken to, Mitch? First of all, Democrats aren't going to talk to you anyway. So who are these multiple Democrats?
Now, on a related matter, this afternoon, the Senate will confirm Dr. Janet Yellen, the former chair of the Federal Reserve, to serve as President Biden's Secretary of the Treasury.
So that is true. So we were watching that also. There's a bunch of different pieces happening this afternoon. We were watching Janet Yellen getting confirmed this afternoon. That has happened. So she will now be the Treasury Secretary and can get immediately to work on those issues along with the Federal Reserve Chair. So that's a very important office to be confirmed. Yet they still have not signed off on the rules of the road yet in the Senate. Mitch McConnell is still kind of holding up on this issue with the filibuster. So that piece is unfolding. Then there's huge news today, which I want to get to, out of the state of Ohio. So Rob Portman, who is a longtime, very powerful senator from Ohio, announced this afternoon that Rob Portman will not seek re-election in 2022. This was a bombshell story this afternoon. And what a way to start the week. Because he announcing he will not run for re-election in 22 sent a shock through the Senate today. I will tell you that. And certainly the Buckeye State political establishment. It also robs Mitch McConnell of one of his strongest allies in the Senate. Now, if you're a Politico like me and you follow this stuff, this Ohio announcement is huge. It's enormous for Republicans and Democrats. Now the scrambling begins because he said, what's weird about this whole thing is that in December, he said he was going to run. He said, yeah, I'm all in. And he's a very powerful senator. And he would have cruised to re-election in Ohio. But an incredibly important battleground state, swing state, And if Democrats want to pick up additional seats there, maybe it's a way we can actually push for progressive candidates in Ohio that actually care for their citizens, that want universal health care, that want to push for free public college, that want to make sure that we have access to quality health care in a way that other, you know, that other countries around the world do, eliminating student loan debt. Like, the time is ripe now in Ohio for there to be a massive change. All of Ohio's statewide offices are up for re-election in 2022. So there's going to be a lot of names being thrown around right now, trial balloons for their jobs. Portman's retirement announcement also could impact the vote during Donald Trump's impeachment trial. Because now, we talked about this earlier today, he was running in 2022 this morning when I covered this story. Now he becomes one of those people that could vote his conscience, not worried about running again. So he could vote to convict President Trump in this impeachment proceeding. You know, he probably won't, but, you know, perhaps people can dream. There's also Richard Shelby of Alabama, Chuck Grassley. They're in their mid-80s. They may make announcements. Roy Blunt, also from Missouri, said that, you know, he's going to be seeking another term, but maybe he won't. Jerry Moran of Kansas. John Thune is also up for re-election. So there's a lot of interesting problems right now emerging for Democrats on this front, because Democrats in Ohio have no one on their bench. They have no one that can go in like, hey, we need somebody to back up. Who's going to run against Rob Portman? No one. Democrats really don't have anyone on their list. Nan Whaley has been groomed as someone who can win statewide, sort of like a Sherrod Brown in Ohio, but she's running for governor. There's nobody left open for that Senate seat. And there are people thinking that on the Republican side, that would be easy for Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan, who has, you know, arguably a pretty popular Republican on the House side. This would maybe give him his opportunity to get more power and become a committee chair, et cetera. So Jim Jordan in Ohio. But this is a big shockwave of a story this afternoon. It could really tilt the balance of power here. But there's a lot of politicking to happen in the next 2 years. So who knows what's going to happen? But just know that Ohio is now firmly in play for Democrats. If they want to try to pick up any Senate seats, they're all eyes now on the Ron Portman front. Really fascinating afternoon on Rob. Sorry, I kept saying Ron. Rob Portman. You know, he won big in 2016, so he would have coasted to a re-election. Pretty interesting stuff on that. So that's where we are this afternoon. Looks like Democrats are getting ready to pass stimulus legislation without Republicans. We knew this was coming faster, though, than I expected. As John Yarmuth says, we don't need Republicans at all. We can go through the reconciliation process and get stimulus out because Americans are suffering. To which Kate Baldwin asked on CNN, well, what about the spirit of bipartisanship? To which John said, I don't really care about that. I care more about people who are suffering. And that's what Bernie Sanders is saying also. So there you go. And look, just one last fine point on it. Jen Psaki was also asked in the press conference just a short time ago on that very question on where the president comes down on this and would they move forward with reconciliation. Here's how she responded to that question.
The president has repeatedly stressed the urgency of the COVID relief package, the need to get something done now. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, in considering the reaction of Republican lawmakers to outreach that was done over the weekend, should there be a more narrow focus on the virus and vaccine that could be done sooner? And while we know that these White House officials have talked to the Hill, can you please speak to the president's personal involvement? Who has he spoken to?
The president has been personally engaging with Democrats and Republicans. We're not going to read out all those calls for you because those are private conversations, and we feel that's the most effective way to get this package moving forward. As you know, there was a call that occurred yesterday that we did a brief readout on from that call, part of our ongoing engagement to talk with Democrats and Republicans. And I'll convey that this is how, in the president's view, and we talked about this morning, this process should work. He puts his policy forward, his vision forward, and then Democrats and Republicans can engage and give their input and feedback on what they think is going to work and how to move this package forward. So in our view, this is working exactly as it should work.
But in terms of is there concern, Democrats themselves, Senator Sanders has an independent, of course, and Speaker Pelosi has suggested the reconciliation should be considered now. The time is wasting. There isn't time for this sort of legislative back and forth.
Well, the president himself has conveyed the urgency of moving this package forward, and that's certainly something he has also conveyed privately to Democrats and Republicans. And it's not just him. There's urgency to the American people for this package to move forward, because we are going to hit a cliff, an unemployment cliff, unemployment insurance cliff, I should say, in March, where millions of people won't be able to have access to unemployment insurance. We're going to hit a point where we won't have enough funding for vaccine distribution. Nobody wants to have the conversation. No member of Congress in May or June, when we don't have the funding to put back to reopen schools, I should say. So there's an urgency he's conveyed. I will say, as it relates to reconciliation, just to take a step back, everybody watching is not as in the weeds on the Senate process as all of you, so let me just take a moment to explain. Reconciliation is a means of getting a bill passed. There are a number of means of getting bills passed. That does not mean, regardless of how the bill is passed, that Democrats and Republicans cannot both vote for it. So the president obviously wants to make this bipartisan, hence he's engaging with members of both parties, and he remains committed to that moving forward.
That's an interesting take on it, that reconciliation is just another way of passing a bill. In some ways, it's not really. It basically is like, hey, we're going to cram a bunch of things into our budget that is not a standalone legislation. So that was a crafty way of saying that. And she's like, hey, you know, Republicans can vote for it or against it when we put it in the reconciliation process. Yeah, but they only need a simple majority instead of the 60 vote threshold to pass actual large scale legislation. So I like the way that she said that. That was crafty, crafty political speak there. Some questions here in our super chat. Someone's saying, answer my question. So Arneda says, actually, a doctor did die days after taking the vaccine. That's true. P.S. Love your channel. And Grover, blessings for your dad. Thank you so much. Certainly, Becky, thank you for your super chat. Says, I'm so sick of the I'm sick to death of the spirited debate. Congress needs to shut up and do something. I agree. Thank you for all of our new channel members, by the way. Nightmare Cox says, I will take the vaccine in 2029. 2029. Thank you for your super chat. Thomas Hussey says, how do I become a channel member? Can't find it on the website, email, or YouTube. Oh, it's simple. Just go to morninginvest.com/join. Morninginvest.com/join. And it'll take you right to the YouTube section where you can become a channel member. And for like the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism. So thank you so much for supporting the channel. I really appreciate it. Yes, there is a website, Tina C, for signing petitions. If you want to go to change.org, you can actually create a petition there. That's a good place to do it. Bernice says, can I do petition for continued stimulus? Yes, I can do that. So I'll work on that tonight for a continuous stimulus plan, and I will put it up here on the channel so that when we have it in the show description later, and then we will continue to push that and make our representatives accountable for pushing for this continuous stimulus. So thank you for that. Ron Jones asked if anyone would tell me to do that, so I will do that as well. Bernice and John, thank you. But thank you guys so much for joining us on this Monday evening edition. If I brought you any value at all today, bringing you these updates, please smash that like button and share our channel with a friend, a loved one. That's how you can also support us. You know, put it out on Twitter, share it with via email with one of your family members, text it to somebody and ask them to subscribe. You know, we want to get these messages out there because the mainstream media does not cover it. So if you have family members that only watch Fox or only watch, you know, I don't know, God forbid, Newsmax or these other things, or, you know, Bloomberg or CNN or MSNBC, they're not going to get these stories. They're not going to get what I believe are the most important stories for the American people. Universal health care, free public college, lifting people out of poverty, pushing for a minimum wage standard across this country, climate change regulations that could actually reduce carbon emissions. We have like a very short window in which to do this. I mean, the story this morning on that, like the ice melts are far faster than we've ever thought that they ever were. The new data on ice melts are astonishing. And we don't have a lot of time. So if you care about these issues like I do, And you have someone in your family that could use, you know, to hear these stories and understand these things and be a part of our show every day. We're live every morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. I would love to have you be a part of our community and supporting independent journalism. So thank you guys so much. And yes, we do have our daily newsletter. Someone was just asking about the newsletter. It's very easy to sign up. It's totally free. Sign up first thing in the morning and get it every morning over your cup of coffee. We write up about 5 or 6 news stories that we think are important for your day. And it's totally free. Just go to morninginvest.com. You just put in your email address right there. Hit the subscribe button. Boom, you're done. And you'll get a welcome email. When you get that welcome email, just let me know that you got it. Hit me back. Reply to that email because it goes right to my inbox. So I see your emails. I got 2,000 of them today. But I see them and I read them. So I try to read them and I try to respond to as many people as I can. But I also have 3 kids and a pandemic. So it is me responding, by the way. I don't have like an assistant doing it. It's me because I think that's an incredibly important part of our community that we're building here on this show is to have that engagement. So when you see me respond to one of your YouTube comments, it's me. When I respond to you via email, it's me. Maybe that's why I haven't shaved and I have bags under my eyes. That's okay. Anyway, I love you guys. Have a great night. We will see you first thing tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Thanks, everyone.